In another battle of the executive orders, the Trump administration rescinded Obama orders that stopped the Standing Rock tribal protest of the North Dakota Access Pipeline. It looks like we could expect a lot more of this kind of thing. Can protests successfully challenge actions of the Trump administration, or are the courts the only real option? And is it an either-or question?
Whatever happens today, the world is watching. Whatever is happening, please record. We understand that we stand not to cause trouble, not to be violent, but defend.
The voice of LaDonna Brave Bull Allard of the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe. Was the world watching? The 2 p.m. evacuation deadline came and went with little action in Cannonball, North Dakota yesterday. A slow fizzle to what could very well mark the unceremonious end to the months-long saga of the Dakota Access Pipeline protests. The Trump administration reversed the order that these protesters celebrated as a victory just a few weeks ago. Jay Caspian Kang, a correspondent for Vice News Tonight and a writer-at-large for the New York Times Magazine, has visited the camp twice, at its height in early December and just this past week. The contrast made him think hard about the future of protests and what's called direct action.
I think that if you talk to the people who have been there since last April when the first teepees went up on the banks of the Missouri, I think that they would say that it was all because of direct action. That direct action is what ended up bringing lawyers out, right? That the direct action is what ended up inspiring NGOs and other organizations to work with them, and that all those together was what led to the first victory. Right now, I honestly don't know. I mean, it's very bleak out there. I think that most people have given up. There are a couple of reasons for it. The first, I think, is because everyone is focused on Trump administration. It's very difficult to have any sort of space, I think, if you're on the far left or if you're an activist, to focus on anything except the presidential administration. So something like Standing Rock seems almost tertiary, even though it isn't to the people who are there.
And yet the people there, when you were there early on, spoke about the very strong legal case that was represented here, because this relates to treaty rights that courts might be inclined to view favorably. That this is not exactly pulled out of the clouds here. This is real, written down law of the land stuff.
Yeah, and the legal fight so far has not been good for the tribes. They are starting to resort to, I would say, cases that are going to have a pretty tough chance being heard. And so I don't know. I think that one of the things that comes away with it, and that if you talk to activists who are at Standing Rock right now or who are involved in the fight, they would say that what happened was that strategically we decided to move from direct action and from occupation to a legal fight. I would be a bit skeptical of that, to be completely honest, because I think that there was no reason why the two couldn't have happened at the same time. And I think that given the quality of some of the legal action and the chances that it actually has to work, that sort of explanation doesn't make sense, at least to me as a journalist.
What do people who are hanging out in the bleak Standing Rock of today believe is the direct action that should come next?
So the rosy narrative that would come out of it is something that would sound like this. They would say that there are other pipeline protests that are going on in Florida, Texas, all around the country, even at Keystone, and that people have spread out and that this is now a national movement. They would also say that there is now a legal language that has been created to fight these sorts of things on behalf of Native tribes. I think that that's a very positive and sort of optimistic projection of what has happened. For the people who are left at camp and even the people who are in the Standing Rock area who are like part of that tribe, I think that it feels a lot more like they've been defeated right now.
And they're not as united as we were led to believe in terms of all these national groups.
And when I was there in December, one of the things that was readily apparent to anyone who was there, I think, was that leadership had been completely split and that there was a lot of infighting amongst the groups there, because it's not just the Standing Rock Sioux. I mean, when you have 10,000 people there, some of them really were like people who might have been at Burning Man. Although that was I think that was a little bit overreported how much of the camp was that. There are NGOs that are there. There are different tribes that are there. And, I think around December when they, they had all reached a fracturing point. And I think that more than anything is why, you see 200 people there yesterday.
As a follow-on, and again, we're talking about Standing Rock here, but, we've seen all kinds of protests in the wake of various actions of the Trump administration. And the question for each one of these protests is, wow, that was significant in numbers on, you know, day X. But the question is, what do you do the next day? What do you do tomorrow? What's the follow-on to a successful protest that makes a really good, you know, sort of television picture for the news? Everyone seems to be having that same problem right now, figuring it out.
Yeah, I think that was sort of my takeaway from the Women's March, which was that I had never seen that many people at a protest before in my entire life, including the ones that I went to in Seoul, South Korea, which had like hundreds of thousands of people there and ended up like impeaching the president. There was no sort of clear message. And at the time, I was just like, well, maybe it doesn't matter that it doesn't have a clear message because the show of people is in itself enough. But I think what you found is that without that clear message, that some of that has already dissipated, and that that what has sort of sprung up in its place, at least in my opinion, is sort of this desire to have a broad liberal message of dissent to the Trump administration that is a little bit aimless at this point. And I think that it'll grow, and I think it'll get better. But right now, it just feels like everybody is trying to lump everything from Standing Rock to Black Lives Matter to the Women's March to the airport protest all under the same blanket. And I think that, you know, if protest is going to end up being effective in the way that you're talking about, the first thing that they have to do is separate those things out and, like, try and figure out which individual message they're going forward with. It's not Standing Rock that's aimless. It's not Ferguson that's aimless. It's sort of the theorizing by, like, either the media or by politicians that, like, this is, like, a huge united movement against Donald Trump. I think that's what's aimless right now.
Jay Caspian Kang is a correspondent for Vice News Tonight and a writer at large for the New York Times Magazine. Jay, thanks so much.
Thank you.
What's the difference between an aimless dissent and a successful protest?
This is Lori. I'm calling from Halifax. And what makes a protest successful? I'd say that it's peaceful, that it has a central message, that it creates civil discourse, and that it's noted. It's democracy in action, and I am all for it.
Ann Houck, Naples, Texas. A successful protest has passion, preparation, communication, shared aims and goals, and cohesion. I would also add smiles. If you're angry and look it, you're more apt to act unwisely, which is detrimental to the cause.
Fairfield, Florida. What makes a protest successful is what happens after it's all over. If the people channel the energy into action that's actually meaningful, like calls and letters to local politicians and running for office themselves. Provo, Utah, shutting highways, businesses, political offices down, creating enough of a hassle for people, particularly people in power, that they have to listen to protesters' demands. What do you say? How do you measure the success of protest? Give us your take at 877-8-MY-TAKE or tweet us. We're at The Takeaway.
Since WNYC's first broadcast in 1924, we've been dedicated to creating the kind of content we know the world needs. In addition to this award-winning reporting, your sponsorship also supports inspiring storytelling and extraordinary music that is free and accessible to all. To get in touch and find out more, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.